Please be seated. Did y'all see the cover on today's bulletin? I don't know about you, but this close to Thanksgiving dinner, to hear that the Lord is going to judge between the fat and the lean is getting kind of personal. Gone from preaching to meddling, I think. This short passage from Matthew's gospel is at odds with itself, I think. First, it records one of humanity's most enduring fantasies. God as an external judge who separates people from people like so much livestock, sheep on one side, goats on the other. The criticism it applies is obvious. The sheep are blessed, chosen from the foundation of the world in the privileged place at God's right hand, while the goats are literally sinister, which is how centuries of listeners would have heard the left-handed goats described in the Latin Vulgate. In this narrow religious vision, the sheep are known. They're us and our friends, our party, our schools, our faith. And the goats are strangers, even enemies, whose differences threaten us somehow. And we may not say it out loud, but on our worst days, this tendency toward judgment seizes even the best of us. Why can't those goats behave, we murmur. Why can't they take care of themselves? Why can't they stop complaining? Why can't they be more like me? But then, the judge of this story pivots in a radical way and suggests that the good and the bad are members of one group. My family, he calls it. The sheep and the goats are all mixed up, and in fact, they're called to serve each other. Belying human prejudice and the systems which make it acceptable, this judge says nothing inside us makes us different from one another. There's only action. And how we love is what makes us who we are. According to God's vision, being blessed is not about your tribe or your birthright or what nation you're from. It's not about your place in your family, your place in the economy, or your place at the table. Being blessed can't be measured in any external way, it turns out, as much as kings and countries and colleges would like to divide us into winning and losing teams. Being blessed is a verb, not a noun, not an adjective. Being blessed is to treat people as individuals. Being blessed is to offer respect and to foster dignity. Being blessed is to lay down yourself, if you have to, for the life and liberty of others. And to meet the needs of folks who are sick or hungry or naked or in prison, according to Matthew, being blessed is to meet the needs of God. And to paraphrase Ezekiel, we're all sheep and we're all goats and we've got work to do. Some are fat and some are thin for sure, but we're in the same flock with a single shepherd. It's not so easy to distinguish between a sheep and a goat, it turns out. A traveling salesman arrives in a country store where he finds four men playing poker with a sheep. He's amazed to see the sheep call for two cards, raise his bets, and then take the pot. After watching for a while, he says, "That's astonishing. I've never seen such a smart sheep." One fellow says, "Oh, he isn't so smart. Whenever he gets a really good hand, he always wags his tail." Or did you hear about the man in the movie theater who notices what looks like a goat sitting next to him? "Are you a goat?" asks the man. "Yes," says the goat. "Then what are you doing at the movies?" the man exclaimed. And the goat replied, "Well, I really love the book." It's hard to tell the difference. But you know what's really funny? When Matthew told this story, the people of Israel didn't categorize sheep and goats as distinct creatures. They saw them as related, like brothers or sisters. So there's irony built into the metaphor that we can miss if we literalize it. Based on the way the parable ends here, with the first and the least as members of God's own family, the setup with the king distinguishing between the righteous and the unrighteous, it's meant to be a joke whose punchline is, "Judge not, lest you be judged." As my dad used to quip, there are two kinds of people, those who divide the world into two kinds of people and those who don't. Divisions kill us. They make us sick. We've got to joke about it because the reality is too hard to take, but we've got to see it and take responsibility for it and build families and neighborhoods and cities and a world that knows the difference, how different it could be. When I think of this story too literally, I hate it. Sometimes it's because I know I'm a bit of a goat myself and I don't like being screened out or burned up. Sometimes it's because some of my best friends are goats and I don't like the idea of them being punished either. Sometimes I have a hard time with the story because it doesn't square with my idea of God, who I believe exercises judgment more like a wise teacher or a devoted coach and less like this angry king. But when I remember that the king in this story, this judge, is himself the Lamb of God, then I begin to hear what the story conveys on its own terms. This judge, Jesus, has been judged himself, and he knows what it means to be misunderstood or misrepresented. This is no far-off figure swooping in to pass judgment on creatures he doesn't know. This is the human one. The crucified Christ, a condemned sheep, holding up a mirror to another one, lamb to lamb, goat to goat. And the fiery judgment that every one of us undergoes is not once and for all. It's an ongoing, even a daily experience. It's a refining fire that slowly burns off the dross, the same redeeming fire that burns away the chaff, so that only the nourishing wheat remains. Now, some would argue that at some unforeseeable time in the future, God will ring down the final curtain on history. And on that day, all of our actions and all of our judgments will themselves be judged. But what if that day has already come? What if the king is here now? And if God has come, then what are we waiting for? Think about it. Judgment isn't external to our actions. It's inherent within them. We know that. It's childish, maybe at best adolescent, for us to think that the judgment is outside of our actions. We know better. Our actions judge themselves. Justice takes the measure of our loving. We're judged by the face that looks back at us in the bathroom mirror in the morning. We're judged by the faces of the people that we care for, by the faces and lives of our children, by our dreams. We're judged by those we stop for and offer a cup of water to. And we're judged by those that we pass by. Do we really believe that this life is a play and that there's a director offstage who's likely to amble in at some point and ask us how it's going and offer us some new stage directions or say about our actions, "No, no, no, that's not what I meant," or "What are you saying? That's not your line, that's somebody else's." The director's here. The action is ours and our life is the play. This is it. And if we're waiting for somebody to come in and catch us at what we should and shouldn't be doing, can we accept once and for all that this way of thinking is not helpful? God is here now, and God judges us every time we act in love. Our challenge is to be undaunted by the enormity of the world's need and its grief. Our challenge is to be undaunted by our lover's need and her grief. Our challenge is to be undaunted by our own losses and grief. And it doesn't help to hide from them. Matthew's new Torah, Jesus says, don't hide. Do justice now. Love mercy now. Walk humbly now. You see, We're not obligated to complete the work that's calling us, but neither are we free to ignore it or abandon it. Maybe our question should be less, what happens to the sheep and the goats at the end of time, and more, what can I be doing now? We can start by trying to see the need in front of you and inside you. And let it be. You don't have to satisfy it entirely. But neither should you run away from it. Accepting that we have needs and that others have needs can be so daunting or shameful that we sometimes close our eyes to it and walk on by. As if by saying, I'm not hungry or lonely or hurt, makes the pain go away. That's like telling a homeless person, you're not poor, you're lazy. Or saying to another, you're not hungry, you're just unsatisfied. Or saying to our own grief, how can I be sad? I have so much. Maybe the first step is to say, I see you. I see you. I see that you're in pain. Will you tell me about it? I don't know if I can do anything about how you're hurt, but I'm here, and I care. I see you. If we read the papers, we know that about 9 million people die of hunger or hunger-related diseases every year, and so stopping to give a coin or a sandwich to someone can seem useless or beside the point. Stop anyway. Share your sandwich anyway. Don't let your worries about being inefficient keep you from acting. Love is wildly inefficient. We just need to start and give, engage, and see. See what's right in front of us, not run away from it. Don't be ashamed that we haven't seen it before. See it in ourselves and in our families. And in all the places we go, see it, see the pain, stop, and then ask about it. Ask your child's school to make sandwiches or soup once a week for a nearby shelter. One recess period a week, every week of the school year, with families taking turns bringing in the bread and the turkey and the carrots and the onions, might just change your child and your family and the school and Baltimore. Or do that at work. Or if the hunger isn't your thing, if that's not what is calling you, do it with housing or clothing or the justice system or education. Let's just start. And what if we say in our own families when times are tough, I see you, and I hear that you hurt, and I'm going to stand with you. We may not think it's enough, but it's something. In the mid-19th century, I'm told there was a little church near the docks of London where most everybody was poor and excluded in one way or another. So they dressed up their children in choir robes because the clothes they had were dirty and torn. And they painted brilliantly colored paintings on the wall because the adults who were lucky enough to have a job worked in airless, colorless factories. And according to a report in the Times of London, when there was a baptism there one Sunday for the child of a single unwed mother, well, the folks in that church created liturgy and music that were fit for a queen. And you know why? Because they knew that the king had come and that he's here now. There's no difference between God and God's people. He's the king of a thousand faces, appearing one moment as a hungry peasant and another as a thirsty traveler, again as a stranger in need of hospitality or as a man who's lost his shirt to pay a debt, as a woman stricken with grief or as another imprisoned and in need of kinship to be released. And all of us are sheep and goats, and all of us have lived and loved and lost and lashed out Yet when we stop and see and touch and offer ourselves in love, then Christ the King has come. Amen.